is XTP Media.
Hi, this is Diego López Salazar from Aeropodcast, and you're listening to Extended.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended, the ETOPS Aviation Podcast. Ready for takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 8 of Extended, and welcome to my co-hosts and aviation experts, editor at Global Aviation Resource, Gareth Stringer.
Good evening, hello, good afternoon, whatever time of day it is when you're listening.
And editor of Aerospace International, Tim Robinson.
Hello everybody.
Right, guys, this episode we've got a lot to get on with. We're going to have a look at some aviation news. We're going to take a look back at 2012. And we have a superb interview with the 2013 RAF Typhoon display pilot, Flight Lieutenant Jamie Norris. We also have a look at some aviation books you might want to consider either as a present or for yourself. And as always, you, the listeners, tell us what you think about some of the things we presented on the show. In fact, we have a lot of listener material to get through, so we're looking forward to that. And because this is our pre-Christmas show, we also have several prizes on offer. So stay tuned and listen out for that. But as always, we start by looking at what's going on in the world of aviation, but more specifically, of interest to the Extended team. So, guys, what's been catching your eye in the news or on your travels? Tim?
Well, recently, I mean, I haven't been up in any fighter jets recently, but did have some interesting stuff, news on sort of space recently. We had the Aeronautical Society. We had Elon Musk from SpaceX come to give a very exciting lecture on reusable rockets, Mars emissions, and stuff like that. It was an absolute sellout lecture. A waiting list for people to get in. Never seen anything like it in my life. I got to interview with him, talk to him, and put a few questions. Turns out his favourite fictional spaceship is the Heart of Gold from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. but on a more serious note, we also went to a press conference recently where Reaction Engines, a small UK engineering firm, had come up and they got a news announcement that they got the biggest breakthrough in aerospace propulsion since the jet engine.
Wow.
Now, if you go out and you release that kind of press release to the outside media, you better back it up. You better have the engineering now, so you'd better have it better not be hype, because otherwise the press is going to tear you to shreds.
Yeah.
However, Reaction Engines, Alan Bond, he's been working on this for probably 30 years plus, ever since sort of HOTOL and single stage access to space. And what it is Reaction Engines have got they've basically done the test now for a revolutionary hybrid engine that will allow Mach 5 flights to Australia or a reusable space plane. So it's real Dan Dare stuff, real science fiction. You know, your first thought is, it can't be real. The way they're doing it is with a pre-cooler to a jet engine. So as you get kind of faster, the air heats up, it gets very, very compressed, the pressure builds up. And that's why jet engines are limited to a certain regime, and why after you get into the kind of high Mach numbers, Mach 2.5 onwards, scramjets are a better bet. this actually cools the air down, and it cools the air down. What they've invented is something that cools the air down from 1,000 degrees Celsius to minus 150 degrees in 1/100th of a second. Very, very thin.
Goodness
very,
me.
Very very thin little pipes. Very sort of, it looks very intricate, but it's very, very sort of solid and robust. And this has got helium in, and the air goes through there, gets cooled down very, very quickly. And lo and behold, you've got a jet engine that can operate from, you know, standing start on a runway to Mach 5. You know, and this has been validated by the European Space Agency. So other experts looked at it and said, bloody hell, it works. So this is really exciting. It is a real breakthrough. They weren't kidding when they put the press release out. Obviously, the next step is, you know, you've got to have a demonstrator, you've got to do some more tests, and you've got to find a hell of a lot of money. So for the next phase, they're looking at 250 million sort of pounds to go forward. They've had investment up so far. They're now looking for institutional investors. They're now looking for partners, sort of industrial partners. So they're not going to make the engine or the space plane themselves. But they're looking to involve people like, you know, maybe people like Rolls Royce, maybe people like Astra, maybe people like Systems, EADS, you know, the big boys to come in and get involved and you know, take this to market and build a reusable space plane, maybe a hypersonic airliner. So really interesting stuff. I mean, it's a bit like the sort of start of, almost a little bit like the sort of start of Whittle and Powerjets, Sir Frank Whittle and Powerjets, in that, you know, Powerjets. Everyone's forgotten their name now, but Powerjets, you know, was Whittle's baby, and that technology sort of went on to sort of Rolls Royce. I mean, there's a little bit of a controversy about it as to, you know, sort of Frank went away and wasn't sort of best pleased at that. But you know, that's the kind of thing. Is it small British company, and wow, they could have this game changing technology. Very exciting.
Tim, are these the guys that are based up in Oxford?
Oxford. Yes.
Yeah. They were recently featured on a show called Talking Space, and we'll have a little comeback to that later on in the show. But very exciting. We may have a link up with that.
Excellent. I was going to say there must be some of these names you've mentioned, Tim. Surely the people are going to be queuing up to work with these guys to get hold of this sort of engine technology, I'd imagine.
That's one of the sort of not issues, but Alan Bond obviously had a sort of a history with the kind of HOTOL and British Aerospace and Rolls Royce previously, where it you know, it hit a stumbling block. And the other thing also is interesting is that Alan Bond doesn't want to give it over to anybody else who would take it over and you'd never see it again.
Okay.
So the idea that some, say, an American company could come in and you know, kind of buy it, you know, sort of take them over, and then say, you know, you're not seeing this technology, we're going to put it into Area 51.
Yeah.
Then he's not really interested in that. They wanted to use this breakthrough for everyone and basically sell these things like airliners.
Wow. Fantastic.
Over then to Gareth, a bit more conventional. Gareth, have you been flying?
I may have been.
Seem to have seen some photos recently.
Yes, it was. I was back with the Aviators. Less than a week ago, prior to as we're sitting here now, we had a bit of a winter meeting because I'm doing some work with those guys. And as it was a sparkling sunny winter's day, clearly it would have been very, very rude not to have gone flying. So when Andy and Alistair very kindly offered, I was like a rat up a drain pipe, to be honest with you.
that's a technical term for overseas listeners.
It's
very fast.
Lots of aerobatics, which was good fun, and some very, very close and eye-opening formation stuff as well. That's definitely as close as I've ever been to a second aircraft.
Wow.
But absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I have had a little flight.
And you've been busy at Global Aviation Resource as well.
Yeah, we've been very busy. There's lots and lots going on. One big thing that we've put together, which hopefully people have seen, I think we'll come on to a little bit later when we talk about 2012 in a bit more depth. But yeah, all is good.
And just some conventional news. The 787 has been in the news, Tim. Air India have recalled Boeing engineers to come and check out their fleet. And then a few days ago, a United 787 did an emergency landing in New Orleans. Are these just teething problems with the 787, or do you think there's something a little more deep-seated?
It's just coming to service, and the fleet is very small. So it's a bit like the A380 in that any aviation directive that comes out, any return to base, any turnaround, any snag, immediately will get reported, and that'll be... Oh, you know, the 787 has got this, problem.
Yeah.
And I would say it's just sort of teething problems. We kind of forget how reliable aircraft are these days. In that you know, you go back to sort of the days of the Lockheed Super Constellation. I think it was somebody described it as world's sort of most reliable free engine airliner. because the expectation was, on every trip, you'd have to shut an engine down for some reason. So we kind of forgotten that because there's now a big gaps between when a new type comes in. The sort of corporate knowledge as to, you are going to have a load of problems, at the start. I think gets a little bit forgotten. And frankly, I'd be more worried as if an airliner came in to service and nothing happened. There'd be engineers there who'd be like, well, it's quiet. It's too quiet. What have we missed? So yeah. Each incident you have to look at. You have to sort of say. How serious is it? Airbus, for example, the A380 wing cracked, sort of dented their image and sort of cost them a lot of money and in terms of prestige. But at the moment, just looking at the 787 incidents. Doesn't look too dramatic anyway.
Yeah, and Boeing are really ramping up at the moment. They're producing them out of Everett and Charleston now. I think the next ones to be delivered are to LOT, Polish Airlines, Qatar, yeah. And ANA are getting another round. So they're really, really ramping up and starting to churn these aircraft out. So it'd be good to see them start to get some miles under their belts and iron out some of these teething problems. Okay, a bit closer to home, one story that came up in the last few weeks, but I know it's been a burning issue in Hertfordshire, is that of the General Aviation Airfield Panzhanger, which is under threat of closure, which is very, very sad because that's where I learnt to fly. I soloed there, so I've got some great memories. But even when I was learning to fly, there was housing development all around it. And I know the team up there are doing everything to oppose the development. But like many others, I fear for its future. What's the views out there at the moment? Some of these small airfields, they're just disappearing.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I think everyone would agree with this. And an airfield like Panzhanger is a community within itself. Yeah, it's got all its regular people that go there. It's got new people, like you were, Peter, yeah. When you went to learn to fly there. So it's a community that kind of grows and evolves. It's like a family, and it's for a lot of people, particularly if they fly regularly, or perhaps maybe it's the social side of things. These places are like a little hub, almost. And to those people, they're very, very important. And housing's important too. We all know that, and nobody can deny that. But it would be a massive, massive shame, if we just saw more and more of these places. And I know we're talking about Panzhanger specifically, but more of these places get swallowed up. And personally, particularly when there's some real history there as well, I'm all for, the campaign to say, look, does it have to be like this? Is there an alternative? Try and save some of these places. It'd be such a shame if they started or continued just to disappear?
Oh, I think the thing is with the kind of smaller sort of air bases and airfields is that they don't have the lobbying power of a major airport to keep them going, and they're kind of people forget that they are the spawning grounds of airline pilots. Where do airline pilots learn to or people or engineers or anyone get involved in aviation or get interest in the first place, and then go on and sort of work at all around the world, or fly from Heathrow or from Gatwick or go on and join the military. It is very often starts with PPL lessons at their local airfield.
Absolutely.
Rid of these spawning grounds, and in the future, if there is a sort of a shortage of pilots, people will be saying, well, why can't I go on holiday?
There's no one to fly me.
Yeah.
There's no one up front. No, it's a very good point. And the interesting dichotomy at places like Panzanger, and as I say, it's a few years ago that I learned to fly there, is the houses were encroaching on the airfield. These were new houses. People were moving into these houses knowing full well there was an airfield next door. And these are the very same people who are now complaining. So I do find that slightly unpalatable and slightly odd. But there is a petition, and we'll have links to that in the show notes if you feel strongly enough to go and support the team there at Panzanger. So after this message, let's get on to our main episode focus, 2012, A Year in Aviation, our interview with Flight Lieutenant Jamie Norris, aviation book reviews, and some listener feedback.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
So Tim and Gareth, of course, the highlight of the year was that we eventually managed to get Extended going and out into the airwaves. And we've had some amazing guests and topics. What sticks out for you, though?
I think for me, and it has been an incredible year, and actually it's interesting looking back at what we've talked about on Extended. I remember that. But I think if I had to pick one thing, because you're twisting my arm, Peter, I'm going to have to... I just want to mention the air show season, if you like, in the UK. It was wasn't the best season in terms of weather. We've certainly had better. But just in terms of overall the events, the participation, some real highlights. It's a fantastically social thing for me as well. It's this travelling circus where you go around and the venues change, but it's the same faces, the same people you see week in, week out. And I did a lot of shows this year, and we are very, very lucky to have it. You know, the Brits love their aviation, and if you don't believe me on that, then just go to an air show and see the people that are there, a lot of whom will be there for their one air show a year, but they're there because they want to see the Red Arrows and a Spitfire and the Lancaster and Typhoon and whatever else it might be. We're very, very lucky to have it, and I really enjoyed it this year, and I can't wait for May 2013 so we can do it all again.
How about you, Tip?
Well, I think it was interesting. I think, obviously we had, it's a Farnborough year. It's always when it's a Farnborough year. And this particular year as well, we had a Queen's Jubilee. So lots and lots of air displays, which was good. We had the Queen herself jumping out of a helicopter at the Olympics. or did I dream that? I'm not sure. personally myself, one of my personal highlights was visiting Edwards Air Force Base, the sort of test center in the States. Absolute sort of mecca if you are an aviation fan of any type. Sort of seeing the actual place where the X-1, the sound barrier was broken, the X-15, all that kind of history.
Yeah.
Wider things, I think what's interesting this year also is London airports, obviously the southeast airports is still being kicked into the long grass. Everyone now is jostling for what happens next, and still sort of jostling for position there. But also I think that sort of UAVs are taking center stage. I've been covering unmanned aircraft for a while now.
Yeah.
And it tended to be sort of like a niche thing that, that people had sort of, oh, right, yeah, whatever, you know, sort of 10 years ago. It's now the military, obviously, has been using them successfully. They're now an essential part of any military operation, is to have that surveillance, that persistence, etc. But now, interestingly, this year there's been a whole swathe of civil UAS stories, you know, like UAVs being used to combat rhino poachers, or Blue Peter having a Navy UAV contest, or, you know, used to do wildlife, great wildlife.
And I noticed that Farnborough are running a show next year, which I would imagine is going to alternate with the main show now, which is going to be focused on unmanned vehicles.
Yeah, so there's all this sort of interesting things like drone journalism, and it's coming now. There's a sort of a pent up demand and awareness, I think, that civil might be a next sort of big thing.
Yeah.
And also, you figure that the kind of drawdown from Afghanistan in 2014 and beyond, and there's going to be a whole load of people who have perhaps learned their trade on, you know, flying these things, and are now going to sort of think, well, you know, this is what I've learned to do in the military. What can I use this for in the civil world? Can I start my own business? You know, can I provide, observation for, take a picture of your house from the air or something like that, and it's really interesting, because it's the things that we haven't thought about is likely to be where, you know, so something happens. There was a conference recently where someone said, is there a market? Well, Henry Ford was told in the when he was making cars, don't bother making cars because there's only 100 chauffeurs. chauffeurs. There's only 100 chauffeurs in New York City.
Yeah.
That's your market. That's kind of interesting.
What about on? I mean, we've seen the 787, we've seen the A380 now on the civilian side becoming pretty mainstream. What about on the military side? At the start of this year, we sat down and had a chat, and we said we'd love to see the F-35 over here. It's had a bit of a challenging year.
Another one.
Yeah, it's still having a challenging year. I mean, you know, at the moment, the current rumor is, will Canadians drop out? It'd be good if you know, they could get it to react, perhaps, possibly.
Yeah.
The other sort of defence story, as well as obviously the F-35 U-turn of the UK sort of switching around from back to a Stovall, is obviously more Chinese stealth fighters coming out of the woodwork.
Yes, they were using aircraft carriers as well this week, weren't they?
They've got an aircraft carrier. It's important not to get too carried away with the sort of Chinese air power of an SU-33 knockoff on one aircraft carrier, because I don't know if you've ever looked for SU-33 pictures online, but finding
it's a pretty old aircraft, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not that. It's finding pictures of an SU-33 on a Russian aircraft carrier carrying missiles is very difficult. Trying to find it, because it's they've got it's not a Resta takeoff. It's the ramp.
Yeah, it's the ski jump.
So they have to really be careful. Be quite careful. So you've got this great fighter, that the flanker is, which is long range, carries loads of missiles. And on an aircraft carrier, you can't really do anything. You can't really put the missiles or the fuel in it. So, you know, they're developing their experience with it. And, the important thing is, I suppose, it's not what it, not its real capability, but the kind of ripples it develops around sort of Asia-Pacific in how it impacts other people's sort of defense strategy and makes them sort of rethink and creates that sort of, arms race. People are now sort of thinking, oh, right, okay, China has got this kind of blue water navy and they have a carrier.
It is classically the big stick, isn't it? You know, it's that capability to project power that a carrier gives you is as you say, is always going to cause ripples in metaphorically and hypothetically. But
So that's 2012. I wouldn't say it was the most exciting aviation year that that we'd seen, but some really interesting developments. I think the thing that actually stood out for me was that I spent a lot more time at smaller airfields and just reconnected with that point you made earlier, Tim, and that was that, you know, this is where people learn to fly, this is where our pilots of the future start. And I've had some great times at some small airfields where I've really been welcomed and really enjoyed my time there. So for me, it's been a little bit of getting back to roots on flying training. But anyway, let's move on. Let's get on to our main interview of the show. Gareth had the chance to talk to someone who surely has the best job in aviation. He's the Royal Air Force 2013 Typhoon display pilot. This is Flight Lieutenant Jamie Norris.
Jamie, welcome to Extended.
Thank you.
Look, we're sat here in your office. 2013 Typhoon display pilot for the Royal Air Force. How does that sound?
Sounds weird, sounds a little bit weird, sounds strange, but also amazing at the same time. And although we're only a matter of weeks away, it still does seem, a long way off, but I'm sure it will arrive very quickly indeed. But overall sounds fantastic, really fantastic.
Is it the ultimate? There's a huge, great tradition of taking the Royal Air Force's sort of premier frontline aircraft out and displaying it for the public, and it must be a huge honour, but equally it's a massive responsibility.
It is exactly as you say there, it is a massive honour, and it's probably the greatest honour that could be asked of me in my current role on the jet, which is fantastic. It's, in my opinion, it's the best jet the Air Force has and has had for a long time. It's cutting edge, and the performance is just blistering, so it lends itself very, very well to be a display jet, as well as its primary role, obviously, in wartime. So it really is a jack of all trades. And displays would just be phenomenal. And, really, really looking forward to beginning that.
Now, you've had a go in the sim. Obviously, at this point in December, you haven't actually started flying the display yet. But how demanding from a piloting, from a pure sort of hands-on throttle and stick point of view are you expecting it to be?
Well, the simulator's good. It will lull you into a false sense of security, though, because at 1G, it's very easy to do all the manoeuvres that I have planned. In the construction stages, as we've spoken about, obviously the G-forces come into play, and I look at every single maneuver to make sure the G-forces aren't asking too much of me, asking too much of the aircraft, and they're all linked in with safety in the foremount throughout. So the simulator can lead you down a rabbit warren that it's actually going to be quite easy, but I'm under no illusion that it won't be. Having seen last year's display and witnessed that firsthand, I'm under no illusion that it won't be. But the simulator's fantastic, and the good thing about the sim is obviously it allows us to iron out all the safety points, all the niggles, and to bring the display that you'll see next year.
Now, you have, as you just alluded to, you saw Squadron Leader Scott Loughran's display from the back of a Typhoon fairly recently. What was that like? Because that you are seeing things as that only people who've displayed the aircraft have seen before.
Yeah, without using expletives or any words that cannot be put on a podcast, the exact words I think I said when we landed was that was an assault on the senses. So in every way, shape and form, it was phenomenal. The second one, which was quite comforting for me to get back in the cockpit the next day and do the second run, felt good, and it felt almost normal straight away, which is good. So the first one's always going to be a freebie. And quite a shocker, but nice and comforting for me to get in the next day and then be almost at home in the display environment, which is good.
Because of course, even if you're a passenger in a racing car or something like that, you know, you're sat there. It's not you that's choosing the direction that you're going to go and such like. And I guess in something like a Typhoon at, you know, big speeds, low altitudes, lots of G, that must be, you know, I could imagine sat there sort of white knuckles in the back a little bit.
Yeah, the what did help, the mitigating facts were, I had looked at and researched Scotty's and indeed every Typhoon display pilot before him sequence. So I knew what was coming next throughout, and obviously Scotty briefed thoroughly, myself and himself exactly, and he does every trip, what's going to happen. So I knew, and I should have known every manoeuvre that was coming. As you say though, still interesting to have someone else fly it. And I think what you don't appreciate when you're in the backseat is when someone else is flying the aircraft, you don't fully appreciate what they're asking of the aircraft. Because you haven't got your hands and your feet at the controls, and in Typhoon there is no feedback in the rear cockpit. So to that end, it's difficult to know what he's asking of the jet. However, as I say, trip two, a lot more comfortable, and I think we'll be even more comfortable again when I know exactly what that I'm in control and what I'm doing with the aircraft. So an amazing experience, completely worthwhile, and as for a good reason that it's included in my pre-display workup. But still looking forward to taking the reins myself. It'll be good.
Now, you have done a lot of research. We're not going to talk specifically about the routine that you're working on, because you know it hasn't signed off yet and things could change and such like. But just give us a little flavour of what you want to achieve next year without necessarily telling us how you're going to achieve it.
Sure. Scotty and I sat down last year, and along with Scotty leader Charlie Matthews, who's my mentor for this year, for next season. And we sat down and we discussed what we'd like to get out of it. Now, the first thing, and this should be the first thing in any display pilot's mind, is safety. So the first thing is that it has to be safe. So that was our first line in the sand, so that everything has to be safe. Now, the fact that we've been displaying the jet for a few years, we know the jet a lot better than we did in the earlier seasons. That made our lives quite easy, because we've got a set amount of manoeuvres that we do and that we're clear to do that I had at my disposal, which is really good. I was very privileged to be in a position where a lot of the manoeuvres have been tried and tested for me beforehand. So people have made maybe the mistakes that need to be made to learn about the jet itself and explore the envelope. So that's all been done. So the second thing after safety was looking at what I wanted to display to look like for the crowd, or indeed hear, or sound like, and feel like. And my first and foremost was to keep it close to the crowd. So the excess thrust of the jet, as everybody's seen in previous years, allows the jet to remain very close to the crowd. That gone, long gone are the days of legacy types of coming enter stage left and exit stage right, and then 3 minutes later, enter stage right and exit stage left. So that's disappeared now, which is good. So hopefully the crowd will see a lot more of the jet close up, and which leads us quite nicely into the third factor of noise. Obviously the shock and awe level of the display is what I believe people come to see, and indeed hear and feel. So there'll be plenty of that to look forward to in 2013. And fourthly, and probably a little bit step back now from the actual public, but trying to make it reasonably simple to fly as well. This being my first display season flying the Typhoon display, I wanted to make sure it was going back to point one of safe, simple as well. So the good old mnemonic KISS of keep it simple, stupid applies to our lives daily in the fast jet fraternity. So I decided to keep the display the same way. So In my mind, it's simple, may not appear so from the ground, but believe me, it's quite interchangeable, should poor weather present itself, etc., but it should be transparent to the public.
Now, I remember Scott telling me that he wasn't proud of the fact that people had said that he'd made their children cry because of the noise, but having had a little sneak preview of what you're hoping to do next year, I mean, you have mentioned it, but I think there's going to be probably... I think there's going to be quite a few parents with holding hands over kids' ears next year.
Yeah, and there's always a health warning that goes out at the fast jet display. I have two children, and I hate the sound of children crying as much as the next man. So believe me, that was never one of my aims. Although, you know, the footprint of the Typhoon display itself, by virtue of the fact it's a fast jet, I think you have to appreciate there will be an amount of noise. But don't worry, there'll be plenty of warnings and no joke, health warnings put out pre-display, so everybody knows exactly what to expect. And if any listeners are planning on seeing us next year, then I'd advise spending £1 on some year defenders before you turn up to see.
Yeah, I think I would concur with that. finally, we're sat here, the display season seemingly months and months and months away, but we're a matter of weeks away from you actually cracking on with your flying, and then you're going to be into a... You know, your workup, then PDA, busy season of displaying, but doing all the engagement and stuff on the ground. But actually, you've got loads to do now, haven't you, as well? Just looking up at your board here, even just to get ready before you've even gone and strapped into the jet and taken off for your first flight, there is heaps to do.
There's a lot to do, and you appreciate it more than anyone, Gareth, but the major thing is that everything that happens in the background is sometimes forgotten as well. So it's often important to point out that all of the work that's going on behind the scenes now, not just with myself, I'm talking about my engineering team, my holding officer, my display manager, etc., and the supervisory chain. It happens every year, year in, year out, behind the scenes. And sometimes it's easy to forget and very easy to not appreciate what goes on in the background. So just know that obviously that happens all the while. Timescale-wise, as I mentioned at the very start, it seems, when you lay down the statement, 2013 display pilot, seems a long way away. I mean, we're only in work for two more weeks, Christmas break, and then we'll literally hit the ground running. So I think it'll creep up very fast. We're ahead of schedule compared to the normal timescale event, looking to have a hopefully early PDA in 2013. So we're ahead of schedule. And like you say, hopefully it will hit the streets, and certainly in a practice format, straight after the new year.
I'm not going to ask if you're looking forward to it, because I know that you are. What are you looking forward to most?
I think the thing I'm looking forward to most, and it's quite hard to explain sometimes, but a day, as we have today, a nice beautiful day, crisp morning, it's just strapping into the aircraft, whether it be, you know, whichever air show it may be in front of the public, just strapping on a nice, crisp, cold day, lowering the canopy, getting into my bubble, into my office, taxiing out, and then literally letting rip in probably the world's finest fighter plane, and then landing and realising that I'm paid to do that day in, day out. So I think that's the best thing I'm looking forward to.
Well, look, I hope the rest of the workout goes well. We will undoubtedly catch up with you through the season, but have a good Christmas.
Perfect, and, thank you.
We'll see you next year.
Thanks, Gareth.
Thanks, Jamie.
Wow, what a lucky guy Jamie Norris is. But whilst we were lucky to get the time with him, we weren't able to cover all the subjects that you wanted to. There were a few more things that you wanted just to add to the interview, Gareth.
Yeah, I think that the important thing to remember when we're talking about Typhoon, yes, we're there and talking to Jamie. He's a really nice guy, and I think he's going to have an excellent season. But when you're talking about Typhoon specifically, we need to just remember that, you know, this is the aircraft which is defending the UK's shores, you know, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They're sat there, you know, on a quick reaction alert should they need to be launched against any threats or perceived threats to the UK. And just in terms of, you know, Jamie's unit 29 Reserve Squadron specifically, you know, this is the unit which is tasked with training pilots to send them on to those frontline squadrons. Now, you know, that is their absolute priority, and you know, it's a big job for them to put the display on each year. But equally, it's very important that you know, the taxpayer and all those sorts of things, they get to see what they're getting for their money, and also it's great they get to see the aircraft, which is really is sort of the spearhead of the Royal Air Force.
Yeah, I mean, last year's demo was pretty impressive. But the point that sticks out for me on that interview is where he talks about the assault on the senses, the sound, the feeling, the speed that aircraft moves at.
Jamie called it shock and awe, which I thought was brilliant. The thing that I love about it is that it's an assault on the senses, not just for him sat there in the cockpit, and it is an incredibly physical thing to go and do. I mean, I've been privileged to have a good look at what he's going to be doing next season, and you know, obviously that's, as I said in the interview, we didn't want to go there because it needs to be signed off and such like. But he's going to be a very busy boy for about 8 or 9 minutes, you know, going very quickly, very slowly, pulling an absolute bundle of G over and over again. But then with Typhoon, it's an assault on the senses for everybody that's outside watching it as well, because it's, you know, I think blistering was another word he used in the interview. It is bloody noisy. There's no other way of putting it. And so it's a kind of assault on the senses for everybody.
Yeah, making babies cry. I don't need a Typhoon for that with the gaps in my teeth. All I need to do is smile. But yeah, it's a very noisy aircraft.
I was interested in the you know, kind of practicing on the simulator and you know, yes, it's, you can do all the maneuvers in it and refine the routine, but kind of what he was getting at was lulling you into kind of sense of security, or what do you say, taking you down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Of this is fine at 1G, and again, having been privileged enough and on enough to have a fast jet flight that this year, you know, it is like going in the ring, in a boxing ring, for those who are not used to it, and you just kind of thinking, you know, just absolutely sort of impressed. These pilots are so highly trained; they're able to you know, fly these precision maneuvers and think at the same time.
Yeah.
So he's got a two-seater one. Then how do we get on the how do we get in the back seat?
I think
you didn't ask a question.
Well, you know what? It's not even worth asking. It is. It's very, very difficult, and rightly so, when it comes to display flying for anybody to get in the back. I I hesitate to go into the detail in case I'm wrong, but I think one of Jamie's supervisors gets one trip with him as he steps down during his training. Other than that, nobody. So I think he is expecting, you know, maybe in the new year when he's flying to be walking out. If he's got a two seat that's been designated, I'm sure there'll be people saying, "Can I come with you?" And the answer's going to be no, you can't. So no, that's his privilege. But I'm not sure I'd survive anyway, to be honest with you. I'd probably be unconscious after about 40 seconds.
But Jamie has very, very kindly left some items for a competition for us.
He has. I've got in front of me, I think there's five here, very nice Eurofighter Typhoon cutaway posters. It's a lovely cutaway of the jet. It's all annotated and numbered with all the detail, and it's got some nice pictures on the bottom as well, very glossy. Sort of cockpit image and stuff as well. All five of those are signed by Jamie Norris, who's put Display Pilot 2013 on each one. I'm pretty sure that not only was that sort of the first interview he's done, but that's probably the first autographs he's signed. So we thought we would make those available to extended readers. And we've got a question for you. Now, if you haven't got a pen with you, don't worry, because you can go straight to the website and get the details. But if you have, Jamie is an instructor at 29 Reserve Squadron, which is the Royal Air Force's Typhoon OCU. But we want to know what OCU stands for. And if you can answer that question, send us an email to getinvolved@aviation-extended.co.uk. And I would put Typhoon competition as the subject. We'll draw five names out and you can win a signed poster.
Wow, excellent.
And our presenters are banned from entering this or allowed?
let me count them again. How many did I say there were?
you said two. So moving on, that's the first of our competitions. We have another one for you very, very soon with a fantastic prize. So moving on, we've still got more for you on another extended program. Sitting down the other day wondering what I might find under the Christmas tree this year, I thought about some of the great aviation books currently available and put this together. Now I hope my missus is listening. As I look back throughout 2012, there's been some great guests on shows promoting their books. Extended's last episode included a world-famous author as our main guest. I thought I'd sit down and look at what ones I'd like to read. So, this isn't a bestsellers list, not those books that are supposedly better than others, simply a list of some of those books well-known and not so well-known that you might be interested in reading as well. So let's start with Roland White, who was on the last show. Author of Vulcan 607, Phoenix Squadron and Stormfront, I'd like to highlight two of his books here for a mention. I've read 607, but what I didn't know is that due to the 30-year rule on public release of government records, the latest edition includes an additional chapter. Thank you to author and journalist Matt Willis for this information. He described Vulcan 607 as one of the standout books of recent years. Whilst talking about Matt, he's actually in the process of writing a book himself, so watch out for him on Twitter, at Naval Air History, and at his website, thenavalhistorian.com. Back to Roland White. I've also read Phoenix Squadron, but not Stormfront, so that's my featured book of the three, about an SAS battle group supported by a small band of RAF pilots in Oman in the 70s. I'm really looking forward to reading it. It's available in hardback, softback, and Kindle. Next is a recommendation from our Facebook page and Graham Platt. He recommends Scram by Harry Benson, the gripping first-hand account of the helicopter war in the Falklands, and this book's available in hardback, softback and Kindle. He also recommends British Phantoms by Pat Martin, and one that will most likely be outstanding is The Phantom in Focus by David Gledhill. It's the story of life on the front line during the Cold War, told in the words of a navigator who flew the iconic jet. He brings us back to the days when this aircraft roared around our skies and tells some sobering stories of some of the more challenging times he flew. Not sure this is available in Kindle, just hard copy. Changing the focus a little is Before They Were Trolley Dollies by Angela Waller.
the story of her flying days as an air hostess in the 50s and 60s. Available in softback and Kindle, Angela takes us back to the days when a flight attendant was seen as a more glamorous job than it is today. Funny as well as harrowing, it's the factual tale of Angela's career, and she gives us an insight into the world of the airline passengers when flying was still seen as a luxury. You can find Angela on Twitter at Angela Waller and on her website, angelawaller.co.uk. Going down under now, in fact a guest on Plane Crazy Down Under, was Mac Serge Tucker, a Royal Australian Air Force F-18 pilot and instructor who wrote Fighter Pilot, The Adventures Beyond the Sound Barrier with an Australian Top Gun.
Yeah, it's exactly right, Grant. And there's a lot of things that I think the Fighter Force does very, very well. One of the ones I think it does is it teaches guys how to think for themselves. So whilst there is a lot of procedures to start an F-18 and operate it, and there's a lot of tactical procedures to shoot missiles and drop bombs, and there's a lot of intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, it's the art of war. The science of war is how you start an aircraft and how you get it to point A in space. The art of war is how then I am creative with the machine and with the tactics and with my wingmen and with the threats, with the sun angle, the cloud, etc., to win the fight. And teaching guys from a young age how to think for themselves is how you end up with 21-year-old guys running around in $50 million machines very safely.
Hearing Serge on PCDU with his frank and open views on the world of fighter aircraft really sounded refreshing. And early reviews of this book, available in hard copy and Kindle, have been extremely positive. Both presenters of the programme, Steve Vischer and Grant McCarran, highly recommend it. Shifting across to the USA, and one of my favourite guests to interview was Carlene Pettit, a 747 training captain and pilot of previous classic airliners, such as the Boeing 727, as well as the Boeing 757, Carly now flies Airbus A330s around the world long haul. I have no idea how she found the time, but has managed to author our only fiction title included in today's list, and that is called Flight for Control. Available in hardback, softback, and in Kindle, it's a thriller focused on the airline industry. With Carlene's experience and knowledge intertwined with a great plot, this should keep aviation enthusiasts, as well as those without an interest in aviation, riveted to the very end. Staying in the USA is previous guest of the Airplane Geeks, Dan Hampton, who wrote Viper Pilot, a memoir of air combat. Available in hardback, softback, and audiovisual Kindle, it's the memoirs of one of the USA's elite pilots.
See, suppression is necessary, but what I and a lot of guys like me came to the same conclusion was that you use suppression in order to destroy the SAM. You don't use it as a means to an end, because if you just suppress it, you know, it's like stepping on a bully's toes instead of putting him in the hospital. If you step on his toes, he's going to be pissed off and ready for you the next day at school. But it's the same thing with a SAM. You shoot a harm at it. You know, who knows where it's going to go to begin with. And number two, you know, it was never designed, and I'm not really slamming the harm, because it was never designed to destroy anything. It was simply designed to suppress. Well, okay, that's okay, but it leaves you with a threat to deal with the next day or the next week or the next war in our case. So I was more of the opinion that if I'm there in the right place at the right time and I can see this thing, that I'd much rather kill it so I don't have to worry about it, or somebody else doesn't have to worry about it next time around.
Dan Hampton served in many theatres and flew 151 combat missions, and this account is a clear and refreshing view on what it takes to be a combat pilot in the modern era. He holds no punches on his views, but delivers an amazing array of stories about his exploits and those of his comrade pilots. This book really demonstrates what it takes to be at the very top of the combat pilot community. And finally, a book I stumbled upon recently, just published in A4 hard copy, is Fleet Airarm Helicopters Since 1943 by Lee Howard, Mick Burrow and Eric Mile. This is a unique reference book following on from the author's previous books, Fleet Airarm Fixed Wing Aircraft, and gives the detailed individual histories of all autogyros and helicopters owned or operated by the Fleet Air Arm from 1943 to the present day. This is a coffee table book for the dedicated enthusiast, and one we'd all like to show off to our aviation mates when they visit. Right, I think that's it. An interesting mix of aviation book choices, all of which I'd like on my bookshelf. But what about you? Let us know your book choices and reviews. Send us a note to get involved at aviationextended.co.uk. Or better still, why don't you send us an audio recording from your computer, your mobile device, tablet, or dictaphone. So, Tim, I believe you've actually had the fortune to read a couple of these books. I think you've got Viper Pilot and had a look at Fighter Pilot from Maxer Tucker.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I got those on Kindle. I read both of them. Both are very, very good. Sort of Serge Tucker is a real sort of character. You know, in the book, he kind of lots of his exploits of not only flying F-18s in the Royal Australian Air Force, but also hang gliders, and he also had some interesting times flying sort of the Gaff Nomad as well, very kind of low level, and also the Viper Pilot book, very, very good, a lot of interesting stuff. If you're into sort of tactics and how you know, a modern air combat goes on, that's an interesting read. And you know, he's a wild weasel. So basically, he's there kind of describing how they're sort of basically taunting surface-to-air missile sites and getting away with it. And you read that, and you realise why. When you sort of hear from descriptions of modern fighters and the situational awareness is so important.
Yeah.
You know, people want the data links, they want the helmet-mounted sights, and that being able to sort of data link to your wingmen and sort of immediately know where they are and where they're looking and your sensors, it really gives you an insight. So, yeah, I think the other book I really read this year as well, which is not on your list, I don't think, was Miles M52 by Captain Eric Winkle Brown, who obviously record-breaking pilot, test pilot, and this is his new book that he brought out. This was almost a British X-1 that was sort of cancelled at a stage in just in the immediate post-war era, and he was slated to fly. And there's also one of the designers from Miles there who's writing it with him, and it's a really good investigation of you know, this almost kind of record-breaking supersonic aircraft that didn't happen, and it still leaves you with questions. It doesn't sort of answer it fully of why the decision was taken to cancel it, to act it. But it's sort of a fascinating thing of you know, that sort of particular time and these committees and groups and I suppose, you know, sort of a way in which a chance perhaps was thrown away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a range of books for you. Not all military. We've got Before They Were Trolley Dollies by Angela Waller in there. We even had our fictional aviation book in there by Carlene Pettit, Flight for Control. We'll put links to all of those books in the show notes, so if you're interested, we'll put a link to where you can find a copy, probably Amazon or somewhere equivalent. But the second of our competitions is here, Tim.
Yes, indeed. We have been looking around in here in the Aviation Extended cockpit, and having a look underneath one of the radar screens inside the cockpit, we found a spare copy of Vulcan 607.
He must have left it.
He must have dropped it. He must have been there after the last servicing of the aircraft. So to win this, we want you to go and tell us the names of all three V-bombers. So if you didn't want to do that, probably best put the V-bomber and title of email and send it to getinvolved@avianextended.co.uk.
Right, and so if you want to earn either of those prizes, you better get on to us quickly, because we're going to get these prizes dished out as soon as possible. So after this next message, we'll get to listen to what you have to say with your feedback, questions and aviation issues.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation.
And so, to the Get Involved section of the show, aviation questions, topics, or good old feedback.
Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
And our first feedback is from Amy Parkin. And Amy says, I really enjoyed episode 7. It was right up my street. The feature with Roland was excellent, and it got me thinking of a question for Gareth. Gareth, how did you get into writing, especially aviation writing?
Well, firstly, thank you, Amy. It's great to get the feedback. We appreciate that. I've always loved writing. I have to say, even back at school, it was the thing that I enjoyed the most, probably, apart from sort of running around on the football pitch or whatever. I then got into I then worked in public relations for a long time and was therefore writing lots of press releases and articles and things like that. But was kind of writing about things that I wanted to write about just for fun and just for myself, because you don't always get the choice when you're at work, obviously. Then when I was fortunate enough to be invited to join the Global Aviation Resource team, when that started in 2009, that was just like the door opening for me, and that was the opportunity then to actually put all of those sort of hours of practice and writing away and tapping away on keyboards and such like into practice, actually writing about what I was passionate enough. But you know what, that came around kind of luckily, just through the sort of friends and contacts and such like. So all I would say to anybody, if anybody wants some advice, if Amy wants some advice, is just keep looking for opportunities. Keep submitting articles. I know Amy's got a blog. Keep writing on the blog, and and just keep at it, because you never ever know what's around the corner and what opportunities might come about.
And Tim, how did you get into doing what you do?
How did I get? Well, again, I suppose I'll echo Gareth's words there, in that a little bit of luck. I was interested in aviation from a young age. I also liked writing. I done some work when I was a sort of student, and I was interested in. And it was sort of kind of luck by luck, really, that the two came together about sort of over a decade now. And someone said, do you want to come and work at the Royal Aeronautical Society, and you have to write about planes and attend a few air shows.
Funnily enough,
I thought about it for about kind of 3 billionth of a microsecond, and so, yeah, okay, I'll go and do that. It's a sort of a happy coincidence, really. But again, I'd say, keep writing, keep blogging, keep looking out for those opportunities. You never really know where the opportunities are. And now the internet is here. This is fantastic for getting your work out or getting onto Twitter and saying, hey, check out what I've written. I didn't have that in my day. You actually had to write sort of pleading letters to newspaper or magazine editors saying, please could you let me loose.
The other quick point I would like to make, and this goes back to the segment we've just done, is and this for me was very important, is keep reading as well. Read as much as you can, whether it's books or other people's articles, other people's blogs and such like, because actually I think that really helps. The more you read, the more it helps with your writing, I think.
I think the best thing about this job to me is, all right, I get to write, but you've got to want to learn to be absolutely in love with learning new things. And if you are I've got that mindset of I love learning new things about aviation, you've got no problem with it.
Right, well, thanks very much for that, guys. Let's move on then to some feedback from Luke Harris. And Luke says, extended team, thank you so much for the great episode featuring Concord. I was so excited to find out that you've managed to interview Captain David Rowland. Many of you may know that Mr. Rowland was the captain featured in the ITVV Concord DVD, which is an excellent watch for any Concord fan. And he puts a link for that, which we'll put in the notes. He then goes on to say, thanks for asking the question about return to flight. I think deep down we all knew the answer and what it would be, but for me it was important to hear it from a Concorde pilot. Thanks again, and he also shares a link with a video on YouTube, which is the world tour by Concorde Alpha Delta. So some interesting stuff in there. I've watched some of that, so we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Moving on, another email from Michael McGrawty. He's been checking out the Get Into Flying website. I think he's interested in learning to fly, and he says there's some very good articles on there. So very pleased you're looking at our sister site there, Michael. He's been listening to Extended for the past couple of episodes, and he has one complaint. And that complaint is they're not regular enough. So I don't quite know how to respond to that. But Michael, some of these episodes do take a fair bit of work, and it takes us a little bit of time to get round to pulling them together. We do really enjoy it, and we do try and get as many episodes out as we can. But at the moment, we're struggling with the schedule that we've got, and we'd much prefer to get the quality of interviews that we're getting and take a little bit longer to wait for them to come in rather than rush it and just have us old three cronies talking all the time. So a bit of an excuse, but we'll see what we can do. We'll try and stick to our schedule of at least once a month, and if we can, a little bit before. Let's move on then. Ian Kershaw from Calgary sent us a note and said the last episode was right up his street, and he also sent us this recording.
Hello, Peter, Tim, Gareth. It's Ian Kershaw from Calgary, although right now I'm actually in Ontario, in Toronto, and just enjoyed your last episode while flying from Calgary and made the journey a whole lot shorter. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed another absolutely first-class production. The piece on the book 607 Squadron by your guest, and his other books prompted me to immediately check iBooks when I got to Toronto, and I've used up my residue of iTunes money and got the books ready to read for the flight home on Saturday. I want to thank you for sharing your stories. I know we complain about being jealous and whatnot, but to be honest, for those of us that don't get these opportunities, to have you folks enjoy them as you do and deserve, and then to share the experience, just brings things so much alive. And so whilst we might tease you about your complaints of the smell of the oxygen mask, we'll live with that so that we can enjoy those experiences with you. And talking about oxygen masks reminds me of when I was in the Air Cadets and went to RAF Basingbourne, which was the operational conversion unit for Canberras. And we got a ride in a Canberra. Now, I was a short guy then. This was in the early 60s. And as a result, sitting on the rumble seat, all I could see was the doll's eye of the oxygen meter and the cockpit window above me. It was the old fishbowl type. And I asked if I could go and lie down in the bomb aimer's position, and the pilot gave me the thumbs up and said, go ahead. I couldn't understand why on approach we were coming in almost sideways and I was looking out the side of the bomb aimer's window and not in front of me. It was only afterwards that I discovered that we were doing one engine approaches, which I understand in a Canberra is quite the exercise, which is why we were probably told to keep quiet. That then had me looking at the YouTube, and I found a piece from Bruntingthorpe where they'd got three buccaneers, a Lightning, Hunter, Canberra, Victor, doing taxi runs and fast taxis down the main runway. That was really great. And the thing I used to enjoy so much was the cartridge starting of the Canberra and the Hunter. That was always an interesting exercise with the plumes of black smoke ejected as the engine spooled up. And then, of course, Concorde. Oh, I mean, what an aeroplane it still is, isn't it? Talk about an icon. The book that I particularly enjoyed would be Concorde, New Shape in the Sky. And the piece which is in my mind now and which was reinforced when I had a look round GBOAC was the inlet ramps and just how much of that aircraft's propulsion came from the inlet as opposed to the jet exhaust. Magnificent and primarily done by pencil, paper and slide rule with some rudimentary analog computing. So once again, thoroughly enjoyed your shows. They come out once a month. They are really something that I look forward to, and I was delighted to see it pop up in my podcast list just before we departed for Ontario. Thanks again to everybody that contributes, to all your guests, those in the past, those who may come on in due course. Your efforts are really much appreciated by myself and I'm sure many, many other folk. Take care and thanks. Bye now.
Ah, thanks, Ian. That was very kind of you. And if you, like Ian, want to send in some audio feedback, you can attach it to an email and send it to our usual email address, getinvolved@aviation-extended.co.uk. And so over to feedback on Twitter. Neil, pilot_NGB, said, episode 7 just blew me away. Congratulations on the amazing show. Loved the interview with Roland White. Well, I think we all loved the interview with Roland White. We had a real ball making that last episode. And I know Roland is very excited about the opportunity to come back on and co-host again. So we'll do what we can to see if we can do that. Moving on, Neil Graham, and that's gneil45, says, have we got any tips on taking low-level photography around the RAF Valley area? Gareth?
You can find all of this online, probably a lot easier than me rambling along, actually. There's plenty of guides online to places like the Macloop and such like, which are the kind of the real common haunts for photographers. And actually what I'll do is I'll find some of that information and put it into the show notes for you, and I hope that's I hope it's of use.
Neil also says to us, what did the RAF do at Donnanook RAF range during the seal breeding season? I wasn't quite sure whether Neil was winding me up about this one or not.
Now, I've done a bit of googling on this just to see if I could find out anything, because I didn't know for sure. And please do write in and contact us if this is incorrect. But from what I can see online is that where the seal, the colony is, where that they breed during the winter, that tends to be on the beach and the dunes. And actually that very, very rarely any conflict with the range that the RAF use. And one of the points that I saw, which is actually very interesting, is it's the fact that it is an RAF bombing range and therefore is for most of the year out of there's no access for the general public. That's one of the things that's actually very much helped that colony of seals grow and develop over the years. So I don't think there's any real conflict there, although it did say that occasionally a seal might have to be moved.
Okay, well, you never be let down on your feedback from on seal breeding on Extended again. Neil also asks us under a different pseudonym, which is Neil Graham Photo, whether Aviation Extended has any plans for 2013 air show meetups.
A pod up.
Yes, we could possibly have a tweet up.
Well, I think it's probably fair to say, and I'm sure that Peter and Tim will agree with me, is that we didn't have a plan, but now that we've thought about it, actually, we should make a plan, shouldn't we? And it would be lovely to meet as many of you as possible. I know that much.
Yeah, and one of our ideas for next year, stealing a bit of thunder from later in the show, is to see if we can record an episode of Extended out at a venue, whether it's at an air show, a museum, or some other aviation related venue. So we've got plans to start looking at that, so we may combine that with this. So thanks very much for that, Neil. And then Thomas Pitts, who is T Pitty on Twitter, and says, what about a discussion on the rollout of MSN 001, the A350 XWB? Well, we saw it rolled out. It's starting to be real, Tim.
It certainly is. I mean, they've got the static one as well, but this is now the obviously the structurally put together. It's misstating the engines, but it's now coming out ready for this is the first flyable one. This is obviously working towards its first flight in 2013.
One of the possible topics for a future show was a feature on Airbus. So Thomas, we'll see if we can look to include something on the A350 as well. Then finally, before we go, Gareth, do you have an aviation topic you'd like to promote?
I do, and I'm really sorry, but it's a shameless plug. The so good was the 2012 air show season that we decided to do a completely free review of the season. Digital magazine, 20 events. There's a Royal Air Force Tornado JR4 roll demo exclusive in there as well. 150 pages of digital airshow goodness, and it's free to download. No catches, nothing at all. There's even some DVD offers, links to video highlights and such like in there. And if you haven't gone and have a look at it, we'd love you to do so, and I will put the details in.
Gotta say, I had a look at it just before we came in to record, and it is 150 pages of goodness. It is sheer aviation delight. So, we don't get many things that are free. So, I would definitely recommend this. So, do get over to Global Aviation Resource and get that link and download it.
Thank you.
Okay, Tim, do you have an aviation topic?
I sort of do. Well, I've got a couple of ones. First off, I'd just like to sort of say, I mean, the feedback we've had, I think I'm not alone in saying, thanks very much for all of the feedback we've had. I mean, when we started this, when I got involved in this, I was sort of questioning as to, kind of how popular will it be, and how many sort of listeners will we get, and will there be any interest? And so to all the people who've got in touch via email or Twitter, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, hear, hear.
And my second one is, it's not really sort of a cause, but there's a really interesting website that's popped up called bombsite.org. Absolutely fascinating, bombsite. And it's basically a interactive map of bombs dropped on London during the Blitz.
Okay.
And this is a great example of sort of new media bringing history to life. And you can zoom in, you can see on the street where bombs fall, and you look at this map and it's just covered with these red dots to begin with, and then you zoom in, and obviously if you live in London like I do, you're gonna be very interested with it. But even if you're not, it's just a fascinating record of history, and it shows how how sort of total war and grim the Blitz was. The amount of high explosive that was dropped is absolutely sort of staggering. So if you're interested in aviation history, or even if you live in London, or even if you don't, have a look at a bombsite.org. They were so surprised, apparently. I think it got put on the Daily Mail's website, and it kind of crashed their servers. But really fascinating historical site on aviation and total air war.
Okay, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. One interesting little link to that through us is that my father, as a 15-year-old boy, worked with the air raid wardens, and he used to rescue people from buildings that were trapped inside because he was quite a slim chap, apparently. So it's a shame he's not with us, because I'd love to sit down with him and for him to show me where he'd actually done that, and we don't have those records. So bit of a shame, but yeah, really interesting stuff. Thanks for that, Tim. At the beginning of the show, you heard Diego Lopez Salazar from the Spanish Aviation Podcast, Aero Podcast, introducing the show for us. Now, Diego asked me if we could do something in Spanish for him in return. So, Gareth, Tim, anything in Spanish?
I'm not very good with Spanish.
No, I thought not. It wasn't fair for me to put you on the spot, but
you did it anyway.
Yeah, you did. Regular listeners might wonder if English is a struggle, but
yeah. But from what I know of Diego's knowledge and experience in the aviation sector, if you are one of our Spanish-speaking listeners, please go and subscribe to their program on iTunes. And of course, if you do speak Spanish, we'd love for you to record something for Diego to put on his show on behalf of Extended. And finally, on promoting aviation, actually, we'd like to just put a shameless plug in for ourselves. Please, can you leave us feedback on iTunes? It's really important we keep the show well promoted and visible. And why is that? Well, because we have some really interesting, exciting plans for next year, which we need to see us grow in our numbers of listeners. It helps us to really attract the sort of guests like Flight Lieutenant Jamie Norris, who you've heard earlier, Roland White, who you heard in the last episode, and guests like Captain David Rowland. So please help us promote Extended, tell a friend, leave us feedback on iTunes, and help spread the word. We hope you enjoy the aviation greatness that we get to share with you, but it does take effort, time, and of course it does cost money to produce these programs. So please help us grow the Extended family. Before we sign off on this episode, we wanted to let you know that our next episode will really go extended, and we stretch up into the ether and cover the topic of space exploration and travel. We have some amazing guests lined up, so if there's something that you'd like us to ask one of them, drop us a line and let us know. We start recording the interviews very, very soon, so do get in quickly for that, please. Okay, it's time to wrap up this episode. I'd like to thank Flight Lieutenant Jamie Norris for giving us his very valuable time. And on behalf of the extended team, we wish you a very peaceful holiday season wherever in the world you're spending it. And if you're listening to this after the holidays, we hope that 2013 brings you aerospace happiness. Gareth, where can we find you online?
You can find everything GAR related at globalaviationresource.com, and I'm on Twitter at Gareth_Stringer, and we'd just like to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody.
And Tim, where can we find you?
Yeah, you want to head over to www.aerosociety.com, and I'm on Twitter tweeting at @RSTimR.
And you can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well as facebook.com/xtpmedia. Show notes for this episode can be found at aviationextended.co.uk, and we'll also be putting all the links on our Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/aviationextended. I'd like to thank White Hearts for the use of their music, and to Peter Dixon for the voiceovers. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, everybody. I'll see you in 2013.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Thank you very much for joining us for episode 8. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Extended, and remember to stay tuned into this frequency. Extended, the ETOPS Aviation and Aerospace Program.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
I've no idea. I've no idea. I've no idea. I'll get it in a minute.
Ava, we've all been on elocution lessons or Skype. The latest update of Skype has improved us all.
It's not very exciting. What I thought I'd do. it's quite sad, really.
Moving right. Targets.
Yeah.
That was, of course, a joke, animal lovers.
So I take it then he's being serious.
Yeah, they're presumably they're given ear defenders or something.
I said, don't make me laugh, guys. And welcome to my co-host and aviation experts, editor at Globio.
Oh no, it's not. And
that's the first blooper.
Stop.
I mean, this episode itself has taken about 9 hours to record because we've made so many mistakes along the way.
Yeah, we started at breakfast and it's tea time, so... Al, before we sign off, we wanted to let you know about our next episode because we really go extended. We stretch up into the ether, and in the next episode, we're going to cover the topic of splay... Okay.
Dying for the loo.
Keep recording.
It is, Tim. It is.
I can't believe I've just said that, then hit recording off. So I've stitched myself up there as much as anything.
We better let Gareth go.
Yeah, I am.
Otherwise, it's going to be an accident. All right, I will float
just,
that one.
Actually, just before I do have an accident, as long as we don't do it on Wednesday the 9th of January, that's all right by me. Because that's okay. It's my 40th. Right, I'm going before I put my foot in it.
This is XTP Media.